The reading this morning is from the first one, 2 Samuel chapter 18, verses 32 and 33, and then 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. And the king said to the Cushite, "Is the young man Absalom safe?" So the Cushite answered, "May the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise against you to do harm be like that young man." Then the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said thus, "O my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place, O Absalom, my son." Now the days of David drew near that he should die, and he charged Solomon his son, saying, "I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man, and keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, and his testimonies, as it is written in the law of Moses, that ye may prosper in all that you do and wherever you turn."
Thank you, Jimmy. Good morning, everyone. As Larry acknowledged earlier, we do have a thin crowd this morning, but we have a lot of folks out of town, and we need to keep them in our prayers while they're separated from us. This, of course, is Father's Day, and as we customarily do, we're going to be turning our attention and our lesson today to the subject of fathers and their obligations to their children. You may recall this whole year we've been devoting one sermon a month to the subject of marriage and family. In the very first lesson, back in January, we looked at the original creation of mankind, that God made them male and female. We spent some time talking about the fact that gender differences are very real, and they play a very important role in how we fashion our relationships with one another. We have, in a previous lesson, talked about just general principles involved in work of parenting that apply in a non-gender specific way to just the role of parents and kids. But what I'm going to be doing for the next four sermons in this series, starting today, we're going to start looking at how the gender differences affect the dynamics among the various parties in a family. By that I mean you have fathers and mothers and sons and daughters. You start looking at the relationships among these parties, parent-child, and you have four distinct relationships: father-son, father-daughter, mother-son, and mother-daughter. And so starting today, we're going to have a series, and again, this is one per month, so this is going to stretch out over the next 4 months, looking at each one of these unique relationships in the parent-child dynamic, and notice how each of them have certain responsibilities and needs that are unique to those relationships. And of course, today we're talking about fathers and their sons. We're basing our study today on the story, the Bible story, of a father, David, King David of Israel, and two of his many sons. Now, the two passages that Jimmy read for us a moment ago, the first one in 2 Samuel 18, related to the subject of Absalom, one of his older sons, and the outcome of the rebellion that Absalom led against his own father. He was trying to depose David, in fact, would have killed him if he had had the opportunity to do so. And in the battle that was fought, David's loyal servants slew Absalom, ending the threat to his kingdom. And we noted the words that David cried out when he received the news that Absalom was killed. Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, if only I had died in your place. Oh, Absalom, my son, my son. Here we have the grieving heart of a father who recognized that he had failed in his role as a father. Now, we're not going to take the time to go into all the history here and analyze where David messed up. Actually, last Father's Day, last year, we talked about David and his role as a father and the mistakes that he made. But Absalom was kind of the highlight of his failure as a father. Of course, Absalom being one of the oldest of David's sons, this was fairly early in David's career, but then toward the end of his life, and this is the second passage in 1 Kings 2, as David was nearing the end, he knew the day of his death was approaching, and he charged Solomon, one of his younger sons now, who was going to take the throne in his place, of what he needed to do in order to be successful in his work as a king, taking his father's place. And I think we can draw a conclusion in comparing the stories of David and his relationship to Absalom and then David and his relationship to Solomon, that somewhere in the interval there, David learned his lesson. And he really tried hard to be a better father to young Solomon than he had been to Absalom. And again, we're not going to take the time to go into all the historical details behind these two stories, only to put them side by side and recognize that we really have here an example of a father who, at least late in life, recognized how important it is to be a good father to his sons and tried in his declining days to make up for the mistakes that he had made in the past. And the same lesson that David learned is the same lesson that a lot of fathers today, frankly, are struggling with. They're not always doing the best job that they ought to be doing in raising their sons in particular. Being a father is an awesome responsibility with a great deal of potential for both good and bad. Now, that applies equally to girls or boys, but it's especially significant in a father's relationship with his sons. And the reason for that is really quite simple. Because fathers and sons have something in common that the rest of the human race doesn't have with them, and what is that? Well, number one, they're males. And as males, they both live in an environment that is soaked in testosterone. They tend to be risk takers. They tend to be more logical rather than emotional. They have, by virtue of their maleness, they have the potential of building a civilization. And they also have the potential of burning one down. And we have seen plenty of examples in our own time of people who, young men, who have done both. And of course, actually, you see that in the two sons of David that we're looking at here, do we not? Absalom was basically tearing his father's kingdom down, while Solomon inherited a kingdom from his father, and he turned David's great nation into an empire. This is the golden age of Israel, and it was David's work as a father that prepared Solomon to do that work. So again, men have the capacity for so much good, so much greatness, and an equal capacity for so much that is damaging and destructive. And a large part of what determines whether a man is constructive or destructive is how he was raised by his father. And that is what this lesson today is all about. Boys have needs that girls, frankly, just do not have. And fathers provide a type of guidance to boys that mothers simply cannot duplicate. And the absence of a father in a boy's life can do an enormous amount of damage. I don't know if you have noticed this or not. Every time there's a mass murder, in fact, we had one here just recently, but every time there's somebody that just goes on a rampage and starts slaughtering people, who did it? It's almost always a male, oftentimes a young male. And whereas the academics and the media like to focus on guns or unjust social structures or other things, there's one other common element that is rarely mentioned. Dig under the details and you'll notice that in almost every case, with few exceptions, these young men that just go berserk and start killing people came from a broken home. They did not have a father in their lives. Now that ought to wake us up to the importance of what we're dealing with. Again, I reiterate, a young man has the capacity to grow up to make great contributions to civilization, but he also has the potential to tear it apart, to burn it to the ground. And it's his father's role in his life, or absence of role in his life, that oftentimes is going to make the difference between him being one or the other. Back in 1938, researchers at Harvard's medical school began a study to look at what makes men good or bad. And so what they did is they recruited the 268 members of the university's sophomore class, and this was an all-male class back in those days, and they got these men to agree to a long-term study, just looking at where they were at that point in their lives and where they came from in their childhoods, and then track them over time. And the commitment was for the rest of their lives. This is known as the Grant study. It actually is still in progress today, 75 years later. A few of these men are still alive, being studied. They're in their 90s now. And so researchers, and of course the researchers have come and gone, you know, and they've had to pass this study on to researchers down through the years to keep it going. It's a fascinating study for a number of different reasons, but what I'd like to look at is the influence of a father that the researchers found. They said that they found, studying the lives of these men and how they turned out, that loving fathers imparted to their sons an enhanced capacity to play, more enjoyment of vacations, a greater likelihood of being able to use humor as a healthy coping mechanism, better adjustment to and contentment with life after retirement, and these men had less anxiety and fewer physical and mental symptoms under stress in young adulthood. And all of that, these positive benefits now, came from or were seen in those men who had loving fathers in their childhood. But the researchers also found this. The ones with poor fathering in their childhood were significantly more likely to have poor marriages over their lifetimes. Men who lacked a positive relationship with their fathers were also much more likely to call themselves pessimists and to report having trouble letting others get close. They summarized it, a man's relationship with his father very significantly predicted his overall life satisfaction at age 75, a variable not even suggestively associated with the maternal relationship, his relationship to his mother. The only reason I'm trotting all this out in front of you is to help us understand, guys, as fathers, we'd better take this job seriously. Because the job that you're doing as a father right now to your boys is going to have an impact on their life at their age 75 or beyond. You're shaping their future lives right now. It's in your hands, what you choose to do in that role as a father to your sons. So what I'd like for us to do this morning, very quickly, I want us to look at four unique lessons that sons learn from their fathers. Now, I want you to understand before we launch into this, I'm talking about fathers and sons. Our next lesson, a month from now, we're going to be talking about fathers and daughters. And the list is going to be a little different because we're talking about two different genders, sons and daughters. And so, fathers, you have some unique lessons that you need to impart to your sons that don't really apply necessarily to your daughters. So let's start out by looking at what sons can learn from their fathers. Number one, a son will learn from his father how to treat women and those who are weak. Now, quite frankly, if we're looking again at the story of David, you look at his life and how he treated the women in his life, and you get clue number one as to why he wasn't a very good father, and why at least some of his sons turned out so badly. Commentators have noted, and I think accurately, that when you look at what David did, particularly with, in the case of Bathsheba, and then all the multiple wives that he had, you can almost see a mirror image of what David did in the lives of some of his sons and the way they treated the women in their lives. The point I'm trying to get across to you, fathers, is if you want your son to grow up and to respect women, to treat them with dignity and honor, they're going to learn that lesson from you, how you treat the women in your life. Our culture today does a very poor job of teaching young men how to treat women with respect and honor and dignity. And our society, as a result, is suffering because of that. There are so many different things that we could say here, but I want to focus on just two things in particular in this area that men need to impart to their sons. Number one is the subject of chivalry, and number two is that of compassion for those who are weak. If you were in our auditorium class this morning, you'll recall that Judd brought our attention to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 19, where Paul said to husbands, love your wives and do not be bitter against them. What's one of the big complaints that women have today about the men in their lives? That they treat them like dirt. That men are bitter against the women in their lives. They don't understand them, and they don't try to understand them. And Paul brushes all that aside and said, men, you've got to get to know your wives. You've got to love them. You've got to be patient with them. You must not be bitter against them. Treat them with respect and dignity. You look at the book of Proverbs, and again, Proverbs largely was written by Solomon, the son of David, and oftentimes in the book, especially in the early chapters, Solomon talks about, when I was young, my father, David, taught me this and that and something else. And so you can sort of see an echo of the efforts that David was making to raise his son Solomon properly in the book of Proverbs. But notice, if you will, what Solomon says in the book of Proverbs to a young man about how to treat women properly. Number one, he says, avoid the immoral woman. And then in Proverbs 31, he talks about, here's the woman that you're looking for, and you treat her like a queen. We won't take the time to go into all the context there, but just notice how Solomon lays out here that how a man treats a woman is going to say an awful lot about his character. And fathers, it's on you to teach your sons what that means. And how's the best way to do that? Show it in how you treat your wife. Your son is going to learn so much more from you about how to treat women just by looking at how you treat your boy's mom. So you show him an example of how a godly man treats women. And not just women, but all of those who are in a position of weakness. Those who are being mistreated in society. A true man is going to stand up and defend those who are defenseless. He's going to reach out and do what he can to help those who cannot help themselves. Why? Because he's a man. And because he has that capability, he has the power, he has the strength, he has the opportunity to be the kind of good person to others that God wants him to be. You see this in the story of Jesus Christ and how he showed compassion to those who were weak and suffering and undergoing hardship. And that's what every man ought to be. And fathers, one of your greatest tasks is to teach your son how to be that kind of man when he grows up. But number two, another thing that sons learn from their fathers is how to work. Look again at the story of David. David was a man of action. He was always busy. He was always involved in something. And I think that's no coincidence that God chose this man then to be the one who would unify the nation of Israel and bring Israel into its glory period in its history. David was a man who was always building something. He built the strong nation, and Solomon turned it into an empire. David trained his son Solomon to be a good administrator and to do the kind of things that were necessary to make Israel truly prosper as a nation. But in both cases, we're talking about men who knew how to work. And you know, we miss that today, don't we? Commentators, sociologists, have been noticing in recent years how we're raising a generation of young men now that don't have a clue. They graduate from high school, and if they go to college at all, they just have no idea what they're doing there. They have no idea what they're going to do with their lives. They don't know how to do anything. And if they manage to get a job, they can't hold on to it for very long. They are young men that are just simply not prepared for life, for occupying their role as men in life. Men have a built-in drive to build things. Several years ago, there was an article that I read by Camille Paglia, who is a very outspoken feminist, but on this point, she disagrees with her fellow feminists. She is just angry that feminism has turned into an anti-male movement, and she thinks that's a horrible mistake. And one of the comments that she made in praising men and their contribution to society, she said that every time I cross a bridge, I think, men built this. Men built this. You know, we have some bridges being built in the interstates around here right now, some construction projects going on. When you pass by there, I want you to just kind of glance, keep one eye on the road, but just glance at the workers. Who are they? Men. Why is that? It's simply because it's part of their nature to work. And we are doing a tremendous disservice to the young men in our society and to society itself by training our young men, bringing them up to think that that kind of working with your hands is beneath them. It's demeaning somehow. Look, somebody's got to do it. Somebody has to build the house that you live in. Somebody has to pave the roads that you drive on. Somebody has to dig the ditches that take the water that run off from the rains. It's men who are eminently qualified for that kind of work. And most men enjoy doing it if they've been trained to do it. I'm really gratified that in recent years, Mike Rowe and the guys associated with This Old House have created a partnership to train young people, and particularly this is going to be young men, to get involved in the trades and the crafts and working with their hands, because our nation needs young men who know how to and enjoy doing that kind of work. Look in Proverbs chapter 12 and verse 24. The hand of the diligent will rule, but the lazy man will be put to forced labor. And a man is either diligent or lazy largely by how he's been brought up by his father. Proverbs 18 and verse 9. He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer. Fathers, look at it this way. Your son, when he grows up, goes out into the world on his own, he's going to do one of two things. He's either going to contribute to society, or he's going to be a drag on society. He's going to be one or the other. Now, what can you contribute to the outcome of that fork in the road that he has to take? You're going to contribute an enormous amount of influence on what he turns out to be, which direction he goes. So give your son chores. Push him to get a summer job. Insist that he carry his weight, that he pull his share of the load. Teach him how to work. And it's something, a lesson that he'll learn that will have profoundly positive influence as he gets older. A third lesson that sons can learn from their fathers is how to develop self-discipline. Look at Proverbs 25 and verse 28. Whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like a city broken down without walls. You know, old cities back in ancient times, the wall around the city was meant life or death to the city. The wall kept out marauders. It kept out wild animals, invading armies that passed through the area. A wall was its defense, helped it maintain its integrity, its security. And what Solomon is saying here is that city wall is very similar to a man's self-discipline. And if a man does not have rule or discipline over his own spirit, and a lot of men don't, then they are subject to every whim and fancy that comes along, and they're almost all destructive, going to tear his life up and the lives of everybody that he's associated with. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 27, Paul said, this is sort of his motto of life, I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. Now, Paul would be the first to admit he didn't always get it right. He made some mistakes. So do you. So will your son. But your son has to learn that this is an essential part of being a man. And if he's going to have any chance of being successful in life, he's got to learn self-discipline. And it's your job as father to impress that upon him. Young men today are raised in an atmosphere of self-indulgence. And the result is a great deal of selfish behavior, unproductive behavior, destructive behavior, the sort of thing that is not helping our society but tearing it down. And once again, fathers, you play an important role in helping your son understand the need for self-discipline. And then the fourth and final thing we want to notice is that sons can learn from their fathers how to be strong in the face of hardship and evil. I'd like for us to notice the statement that David made to Solomon in 1 Kings 2 and verse 12. Did you catch that when we read this a moment ago? He told Solomon, be strong and prove yourself a man. Now, you know, today feminists look at that and they say, oh, how preposterous. You know, in trying to reinforce this manly image, you've got to be a man, you know, to be successful in life. Well, yeah. Solomon was going to carry a huge burden on his shoulders. And David had been there. I mean, he knew what it was like to run a kingdom. And now he's passing that over to Solomon, and he's telling Solomon what he knew from experience. Solomon, you're going to have to be a man about this. The job that I'm passing on to you is not an easy one. Prove yourself a man. And this brings to mind an interesting passage. I don't know if you've ever noticed this before, but look at 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 13. I'll read it for you very briefly. Paul tells the Corinthians, watch, stand fast in the faith, be brave, be strong. Now, I'm reading from the New King James Version. And that third expression there, be brave, I think is a poor rendering. The Old King James Version renders it, quit ye like men. And unfortunately, the word quit in there, I've actually heard people read that verse and make the comment that if you're going to quit, at least be a man about it. Well, no, that's not what Paul is saying there. The whole expression that is used there, it's a single Greek word, and other translations render it like this. Act like men. Or some of the older commentators said, play the man. Lenski, in his commentary on this verse, renders it, be manly. And the root Greek word there actually means male. Be a male. Now, Paul is writing to all the Corinthians, whole congregation of people. There's men and women of every sort out there, and he's telling all of them, be manly. This has led some commentators to suggest that perhaps what Paul has in mind here is sort of a discreet way of pointing the finger to the men in the congregation saying, guys, get your act together. This is a congregation that was coming apart at the seams. There was all kinds of foolishness and stuff going on in the congregation that just, there was no excuse for it. And Paul is, in a subtle sort of way, he's telling the men, guys, man up. Step up and be the kind of leaders in the congregation, in your families, in your marriages that you ought to be. Because this is really going to be, this is going to make or break your success as a congregation. It's what kind of men you have serving there. And so he's telling them, act like men, play the man, be manly. And fathers, men learn that lesson at home when they're little. Your job as a father is to teach your son to play the man, to man up, to be brave, to be courageous, as other translations render it. You know, when things go wrong and society breaks down, who usually has to come in to pick up the pieces and fix the mess? Men. You don't believe me? Get out your old history books and look at photographs of who was storming the beaches at Omaha Beach on D-Day. It wasn't the local chapter, the women's auxiliary. It was men. Can you imagine what it took for those planks on those boats to fall down and those men to charge into the face of machine gun fire? Many of them didn't make it. But men stormed those beaches. When the planes hit the Twin Towers on 9/11 and everybody was scrambling to get down, who was on those stairs going up to do what they could to save who they could? It was men. You just extrapolate those examples across the spectrum of all of society's challenges. And who is it that's going to spell the difference between success or failure in a society, in a nation, in a civilization? It's men. Now, that's not to say women do not have contributions to make. They do. We'll talk about that in a later lesson. But it's the men who have to rise up and accept their challenge as men, as what God made them to be, if society is going to have any hope of facing the challenges that it has to encounter along the way. So here are four lessons that fathers need to teach their sons: how to treat women and the weak, how to work, how to develop self-discipline, and how to be strong in the face of hardship and evil. Now, before we wrap up, very quickly, I want to offer some practical advice to specific groups of people in this audience this morning. Not just the folks here, of course this applies across the board, but you will find yourself probably in one of the categories that I'm about to lay out here, and I want each of you to recognize the responsibilities that you have in regard to what we've just talked about. Number one, I want to talk to young fathers. Get close to your sons. Get close to your boys. And I'm not talking about be best buds with them. I mean be a father. Someone that your son can look up to. Someone that your son will want to emulate. That means you have to open up to your boys. You have to share your life experiences with them. You have to be willing to talk to them and to answer the questions that they might have. It means that you have to be firm with your boys. There's some craziness you can't let them get away with. But at the same time, you have to be supportive because, after all, they are going down the path that you went through years before. Remember those days and how crazy you were? Well, they're... boyish enthusiasm needs to be channeled, but it needs to be encouraged. Your job is not to squelch their manhood, but to channel it in the direction that can be productive and positive. What about you older men? You've done your job. You've raised your kids. All that has gone on in the past now. There's really nothing else you can do. You've done your job, right? You can check out? Not really. You know, the younger men around you could sure benefit from the wisdom that you have. Be a mentor to the younger fathers around you. These young guys that are themselves, going through the same struggles you went through 20, 30, 40 years ago, they could use your wisdom, your help in learning how to be fathers. And not just mentoring the younger fathers. You know, there are a lot of young men, young boys, who do not have a father. And these are the ones that are at risk, right? Get close to them. Be a mentor to them. Be a surrogate father, if you will, in their lives. Someone that they can look up to and respect, and from whom they can get advice and guidance and counsel as they try to navigate the turbulent waters of boyhood. Be that kind of source of guidance in their lives that they so desperately need. And now I want to talk to any of you men who may find yourself in a position that you didn't ask for. It's not your fault. But you grew up in a home without a father. You never had the kind of father figure we've been talking about in this lesson. And you feel the pain of that. You know that you missed something, and it probably, perhaps, damaged your life, your character, your relationships later in life in some way. What can you do? My advice here is seek the counsel of older men. Look around you. Are there other men who you acknowledge have done a good job of being a man in life, of being a successful husband and father to their own children? Then seek their counsel. Push them to get involved in your life, and don't take no for an answer. Read books on the subject. You know, I can relate something personally here. My own father was one of four boys who was raised during the Depression by a single mom. Their dad ran out when they were all little. And my poor grandmother had to raise those boys by herself in the midst of the Depression. You think that was easy? But you know what those boys did have? We're talking about deep East Texas piney woods here. They had a number of older uncles and cousins who served as role models for them and spent time with those boys and helped them to grow up into the men. All four of those men, my dad and his four brothers, they turned out to be good, decent, godly men, family men, and did a good job of it. It is possible for you, no matter what kind of disadvantaged background you came from, to overcome that and to be a better man. But you do need help from others who can offer that help to you. And now I want to turn my attention to the mothers, the wives, the girlfriends, the women that are kind of in this orbit of all this testosterone. My advice to you ladies is encourage your men in their masculinity. Don't belittle them. Don't ridicule their masculine interests and endeavors. Don't discourage them from being what God made them to be. You don't understand these men in your life and why they're interested in the things they're interested in, why they do the things they like to do. Well, guess what? They don't understand you either, so we're all even, okay? But more than that, they understand what they're doing. They understand why it's important. Cooperate with that. Support and encourage these men, especially your husbands in raising your sons. Never belittle the work that they're doing with those boys because it's so critical to their upbringing. And then finally, I want to address the boys. It may be easy for you young men to think, well, okay, all of this that he's been talking about to this point is talking about my dad or my grandpa or the other men in the congregation, you know, and I'm just along for the ride. No, you're not. If you're old enough to understand me and what I'm saying here this morning, you're old enough to get close to your dad. You're old enough to ask questions. And again, if you do not have a dad at home, then you seek out an older man and you insist that he become your surrogate father. Try to get close to some kind of man in your life that you can respect, that you can ask questions of, and that you can seek counsel from, and that will do a decent job of helping you figure out how to grow up into a successful manhood. You know, the human race has made quite a mess of this world, has it not? And as men, we certainly have to take our share of the blame for how the world has turned out. But have you ever thought about the fact that it took one special father-son relationship to salvage the world? The father in this relationship had a master plan, and he set that master plan in play. And throughout all of history, he's been working out this great plan to try to save the human race from its own stupidity. And at a key point in time, this father sent his only son to this earth to play a key role in performing a task that could not be done by anybody else in any other way. And that role involved something that was so hard, so painful, that it cost him his life. Fathers, sons, reflect on that. What that father and son did saved the human race, saved you and me. In your own small way, as fathers and sons, you have the opportunity of saving the lives of others, of being a source of good and kindness and compassion and strength in a world that is so desperately short of it. If you're here this morning and you need the grace of God expressed in His Son, Jesus Christ, we're here to help you in any way that we can. We encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.